On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
As you've heard, I think primary concern is around the ongoing situation regarding the HSE, the cyber attack and the threat of a data dump in the coming days. We're joined on the line by the chief executive of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, we will talk about the prospect of there being a data leak in the moment, but it would be easy to overlook, and so I want to come to it first, the idea of potentially of just how much vaccine progress you're making this week and how things are actually looking in the COVID-19 vaccine rollout.
Morning, Gavin. And I'm actually talking to you here this morning from City West, where we have our crisis management centre for the cyber security incident. And as I walk in this morning, I'm seeing many happy faces as people going in and coming out from our vaccination centre here in City West, and thousands of people will be vaccinated here today. So yeah, what has happened has masked the fantastic progress that's happened over the last week and couple of weeks in particular in the vaccination programme. And I can just say it's great credit to our teams who are trying to manage through, many of our teams who are trying to manage both crisis we're dealing with here and keeping vaccinations going. So if you look at what's happening this week, by the end of today, we'll be approximately 300,000, close to 300,000 vaccines administered this week. And in total, we don't have the GP data, but judging by what we have dispatched and the great work by GPs, in total today, we've probably well over 2.4 million vaccines completed, well over 1.7 million. Dose ones, which would be about over 45% of the population, and well over probably 650,000 dose twos.
Now, 300,000 doses in 1 week is serious progress, and it is a shame that, what's been going on elsewhere in the system has sort of masked that. Are we looking at a similar pace again in the week to come? And also, is there any truth to the story that was put out in the last couple of days that there is a fairly significant Pfizer shipment due in the first week of June as well?
Yeah, well, if you take what's happened over the last 2 weeks, previous 2 weeks, it has been around 290,000-300,000 over the past 2 weeks. Certainly over the next couple of weeks, Pfizer delivery is strong. As we head into May, not as strong, and AstraZeneca and Janssen. Well, AstraZeneca we have, Pfizer's committed, but not as strong as Janssen, so it does nullify some of that. But still, we're looking at strong weeks ahead, but it does kind of stall just a slight bit and then grow again in the middle of June. But still really look like a very strong week ahead next week too.
Given that the stats production from vaccines has been disrupted by what's been going on in the last 10 days or so, at this stage, do you know when you might have all those systems back up and running so that there will be a little bit more public transparency and a bit more data around how well things are going?
Yeah, well, what we can see every day, unfortunately it's difficult to publish, what we can see every day are all of the vaccinations completed by our vaccination centres and the HSC teams. And that's running on average this week, about 30,000 per day. What is missing in technology terms is a health link. It's a link that provides data between ourselves and the GPs.
Okay.
Between themselves. So that is one of the systems that we have to restore, but it's not immediate on our priority line, not that it's not urgent, it is. But there's a whole stack of systems we're trying to restore parallel. So
Can you talk us through that priority line? Because obviously now that you know you have some means by which you can start decrypting things and getting things back online. So I'd imagine that does lead you with some difficult policy choices about if you only have limited time to try and get certain things back up and running, which ones you start with.
Yeah, and look, HealthLink, in terms of links to GP, is a key priority because we need the GPs to make referrals into the health system as well. So I don't give the impression it's not. But if you look at what we are doing right now, certainly getting our hands on the decryption key, which is in essence a code, it's not a switch back on the lights, unfortunately, but it does help us. We had been in a process of restoring some systems, rebuilding some others, and indeed renewing some others, and indeed removing some from our network. And what the decryption tool helps us in that process now again. So on the kind of priorities of systems and services that we are working through this at the moment is obviously key is our diagnostic tools that help in terms of CTs, MRIs, X-rays, our labs across the country, our patient administration systems. As I mentioned, it's linked to GPs. There's a kind of really big kind of network infrastructure that all of the HSE hospital systems are built on. And we're making progress on that.
Do you have any kind of a timeline for when individual bits of that will come on? Because there will be people who'll be listening in this morning who may have had an upcoming hospital appointment who'll know that everything was thrown into doubt inside the last week and will be wondering whether things might be back up and running in time for this coming week and whether their own appointments might go ahead. Is there any kind of information you can give them now?
No, I think what we have to say is, well, first of all, please do watch our site, hse.ie. It's updated regularly on the hour, and more sites, hospitals are coming on board with different services as we progress. But I do need to be upfront and with everybody. This is a period still of weeks before we work through the impacts of all of the services and on all of the systems to support those services. So next week, what we will see are some of hospitals we have got to a better state over the weekend. So they would have, many of them would have access now to the radiology within their hospital, not across hospital to refer, but within their hospital. They would have access to their labs. Many hospitals now have access to their patient administration systems. Many don't. So, and also things like oncology, key for us, maternity, and the toothless systems.
Yeah. So there's no single golden rule then for when things might be back up and running, and that in some cases it will be weeks before things are back to normal.
I think the reality of what will happen is you will see some hospitals up and running, if you like, within their bubble. So they have services within that hospital, not having capacity to get patients like analysis or information across hospitals, but operating within their hospital, we'll see some more improving. But again, I just really need to manage everybody's expectations. This is a very significant hit on
that. Given that the timetable doesn't seem to have sped up, even with the release of the decryption key by the team that were responsible for this, is it fair to say that then, is that making the progress any quicker at all, or is it simply the case that you sort of have to rebuild it from scratch irrespective of whatever help they've given you?
No, I think it's to reassure everybody, it is helping. When we got the decryption kind of script, we had to replicate that in a very safe way because we had to be very cautious what we put back on into the network and any potential damage it would do. So working with our international partners, we created, if you like, a replica script, ran some of that script over yesterday. It did cause some inconsistencies in terms of how it brought some services up. So we've been very cautious about it, but we are making good progress to reassure people. But it's slow, it's steady. We have to do it in a very safe manner. But it is facilitating us. What we have to do, Gavin, is now apply that solution that's been replicated at a central level. So we can do it centrally across a number of those servers. We can do it at a regional level, kind of looking at the old hospital boards. And then thirdly, is the kind of boots on the ground where we will have to go out and replace some laptops, probably about 30,000 laptops, and apply the solution at a more local level. So it's a combination central, regional and local, how we apply the solution.
It's surreal to be talking about the amount of work that you have to do simply to get the hospital ICT infrastructure back up and running, given everything that's been going on inside the last 15 months. Ironically, there's often criticism that the health service has needed to become more centralised, and there's always been pushes for reform in that area. Might it be the case that because our system isn't as fully centralised as it could or possibly ought to have been, and because there's voluntary hospitals and the likes, that actually it has ring-fenced us from what could have been even worse?
Well, it's a kind of... You can look at it two different ways. Certainly, we have a lot of legacy systems that, go back many, many years and function of many health boards, which were separate, and then function of voluntary hospitals, which have standalone systems themselves. So it's not a very integrated network. But certainly, as we invest, so just take, for example, what's happening over the past year with COVID. As we invest in testing and tracing and vaccination, we build more and more of that solution in a very different way and at a national level. And thankfully, you know, with some workarounds on testing and tracing, both testing and tracing and vaccination have continued very strongly, which is good to protect the public. So I think it's about investing in new. So, for example, if you see some hospitals who have gone completely electronic, some maternity hospitals in particular, they have now an absolute reliance on those electronic systems for their patient records, for their outpatient clinics. We do want to invest in technology. It is the solution, and it has advanced the health system rapidly over the last few years.
You mentioned the legacy systems there and some of the role that they've had, and it's been pointed out that in the HSE's own annual reports for the last couple of years, that attention has been drawn to the vulnerability that might be there as a result of how old some of those systems are. I know hindsight is 2020, and sometimes people will point to the use of Windows 7 or older versions of operating systems, but in hindsight, could more have been done, or were warning signs there which, if you'd followed them, might have helped to avoid this?
Well, the reality of what has happened here now, and working with our international partners who are scanning our network and working with us and large extent collaborating and directing us on next steps, there's no doubt what we will find in this where vulnerabilities of a network, because that's what's happened. But I will say a few things on this. It's any big organization like ourselves takes this risk seriously. We did. We always do. I put a strong emphasis on risk and risk management in the HSE. The giant with the board of the HSE, we identified many of these risks. We initiated the audit that found many of these risks. We set out a number of actions to address those risks over the past few years. And we have done things like protecting all endpoints where people access the network, protections on our servers, protections of how we secure data, firewalls, and general awareness about staff and accessing emails and accessing attachments. So it's a big issue for organisations. It's a big issue for the state.
Mm.
But we certainly take it serious, have taken it serious. And I've no doubt
Do you think that the resourcing has been there to try and deal with those, though? Because as I said, it's been mentioned in your own annual report, so clearly there have been some flags raised about it.
Yes, and again, those flags were raised by ourselves, and that is good corporate risk governance. In terms of the resources to it, we put about on cyber spend in last year just about 27 million, and indeed this year again dedicated about 37 million a year, but about 82 million overall in the past 3 years. And that spend is targeted on that. But also, as we invest in capital infrastructure, you are building your networks in a very different way. But I will bring it back to, I mean, we are dealing with, in many parts of our network, a legacy network over 30 years that we have to layer security on top of.
Mm.
We've taken it seriously, but this has happened. I know many organisations are watching this now, not just within the public service, but across the private sector. It's a new form.
It's definitely a case study that a lot of people will be watching. And one other aspect on that before I let you go, because I think we're beginning to lose your line a little bit. Hopefully listeners are still able to keep up with you. I know that it's not just you that would have input into this decision, but if the group that are behind this attack are still threatening to do data dumps or to sell on whatever they've harvested to other bad faith actors in the coming days, and given the legal consequences that the HSE might face over that, where you could have potentially tens of thousands of records being dumped and tens of thousands of people's privacy being violated, and then potentially tens of thousands of people looking for compensation from yourselves, is there a case to be made that paying ransom, even if it is $20 million to this group, might be a more prudent financial decision than what could follow?
Just say a couple of things on that, and hopefully the line is okay. Firstly, we take patients' data and protection of patients' data very seriously, and that's why we secured probably one of the strongest High Court orders that can be achieved. And that applies to persons known or unknown who may publish or circulate data in relation, or even platforms that may be published on. Now, I should say the social media companies have been working really strongly with us, and I thank them for it.
But the criminals and bad faith actors aren't likely to have much sucker for a High Court order, though, are they?
No, I say, and that's what I was going to say. Secondly, so, I mean, I know we're dealing with, you know, can you imagine a lower form of crime than publishing data on sick people? But secondly, in terms of ransom or ransom payments, obviously, those are matters for government policy. I think you've heard government ministers Taoiseach repeatedly state very clearly government policy. And from our perspective, look, you know, investing in criminals just enhances the capacity of criminals for order. So it's a really race to the bottom.
No, and it's a fair point, but it would be yourselves in the HSE which would be on the hook, so to speak, if there were to be any people taking cases over the breaches of their data. So surely you'd have some thoughts or some input as to whether it might be prudent to try and pay to make the problem go away.
You know, and that's what I'll say again. Ultimately, yes, of course, what we want to do is protect patients' data. This is a very serious issue for us, and we know what the criminals have threatened to do. And we're trying to, as best we can, secure that data. But ultimately, decisions around paying ransoms are policy decisions for government. We will obviously contribute to that, but, you know, I think we've heard it very clearly.
Okay. We will leave it there. Paul Reid, thanks very much for your time this morning. Paul Reid, the Chief Executive of the HSE, joining us from the City West Vaccination Centre this morning.